Now, I have comprehensive research material to craft an engaging and accurate section on codebreakers and resistance fighters. Let me write this section of the unit study. Codebreakers and resistance fighters made the invasion possible. While some American businessmen were making deals with Nazi Germany in their offices, other people were quietly doing the dangerous work that would actually help defeat Hitler. Not through money or machines, but through courage, intelligence, and sacrifice. The story of D-Day isn't just about soldiers storming beaches. It's also about secret workers reading enemy messages, mathematicians building room-sized machines, and ordinary French citizens risking their lives to cut telephone wires and blow up railroad tracks. The secret that saved 16,500 lives. The Normandy landings on June 6, 1944, came as a complete surprise to the Germans. Military historians estimate that this surprise saved approximately 16,500 Allied lives on D-Day alone. But how did the Allies manage to land 160,000 soldiers on the beaches of France without the Germans knowing exactly when and where they were coming? The answer involves one of history's greatest tricks and thousands of people whose names you've probably never heard. The Poles who cracked the unbreakable code. Here's something most people don't know. The famous code-breaking work at Bletchley Park in England didn't start from scratch. It began with Polish mathematicians who had already solved the German Enigma cipher years earlier. Poland is a small country sandwiched between two powerful neighbors, Germany and Russia. Throughout history, these neighbors had often invaded Poland. So Polish intelligence worked extra hard to spy on what its neighbors were planning. In the 1930s, a Polish mathematician named Marian Rejewski figured out how the German Enigma machine worked. The Enigma was a portable device about the size of a typewriter. When a German soldier typed a message on it, the machine scrambled each letter through a complicated system of rotating wheels and electrical plugs. The Germans believed no one could ever unscramble their messages without knowing the exact settings they used, settings that changed every single day. The Germans figured that even if the Allies understood how Enigma worked, breaking the daily code would require a building full of machines. They didn't believe anyone could actually build such a thing. They were wrong. In 1938, the Poles built six machines called Bombi that could detect possible daily settings. Then, in July 1939, just weeks before Germany invaded Poland and started World War II, the Poles made a fateful decision. They shared everything they knew with the British and French. This gift would change the course of the war. But the Polish mathematicians who made it all possible rarely get the credit they deserve. Most history books jump straight to the British codebreakers, forgetting the crucial Polish work that came first. The forgotten majority, women codebreakers at Bletchley Park in England, the British mathematician Alan Turing became famous for refining the Polish designs and building better bomb machines to crack Enigma. Today, Turing is celebrated in movies and books as a genius who helped win the war. But here's what those movies often leave out. The Bombi machines were run by approximately 2,000 members of the Women's Royal Naval Service, called Wrens. These women operated the massive room-sized machines around the clock, testing settings and feeding in messages. Without their work, the code-breaking intelligence would never have reached the commanders who needed it. In the United States, the story was even more striking. By 1945, out of about 20,000 American code-breakers working during the war, approximately 11,000 were women. At the U.S. Army's code-breaking headquarters at Arlington Hall, nearly 70% of the workforce was female. These women weren't just doing simple tasks. Some made crucial breakthroughs themselves. Genevieve Grutchen, a young woman who had wanted to become a math professor but couldn't find a university willing to hire a woman, made a key discovery in September 1940 that allowed the Allies to read Japanese diplomatic messages for the rest of the war. So why don't we hear more about these women? Several reasons. They took their secrecy oaths seriously and never talked about their work. Many went to their graves without telling even their own families what they had done. They came from a generation when women didn't expect public credit, and they weren't the top officers who wrote the official histories afterward. Prime Minister Winston Churchill called his Bletchley codebreakers the geese that laid the golden eggs and never cackled. The women, perhaps more than anyone, kept that promise of silence. How code-breaking made D-Day possible. So what did all this secret work actually accomplish? The code-breakers could read messages sent between Hitler and his top commanders. They knew what the Germans were thinking, where they were placing troops, and what they expected the Allies to do. One of the most valuable sources was Baron Hiroshi Oshima, Japan's ambassador to Nazi Germany, who sent detailed reports back to Tokyo using a cipher the Americans had broken. These reports often included conversations Oshima had with Hitler himself. This intelligence helped Allied commanders make one of the most important decisions of the war, to land at Normandy instead of at Calais, where the Germans expected them. The codebreakers had learned that Hitler believed the main Allied attack would come at the Pas-de-Calais, the region around the city of Calais, the narrowest point of the English Channel, the bodyguard of lies. Armed with this knowledge, the Allies created a brilliant deception program called Operation Bodyguard. Churchill himself described it as creating a bodyguard of lies to protect the truth about when and where the invasion would happen. The Allies built two phantom armies that existed only on paper, or more precisely, in fake radio signals. German intelligence was listening to Allied radio traffic, trying to figure out where troops were massing. So the Allies filled the airwaves with fake communications, making it sound like entire armies were gathering in places where no troops actually existed. One phantom army supposedly gathered in Scotland to attack Norway. Another, the 1st U.S. Army Group under the famous General George Patton, supposedly prepared to cross the Channel at Calais. Patton was a real general, and the Germans feared and respected him. But his army was completely imaginary. The British also used double agents, German spies who had been captured and turned to work for the Allies. These double agents sent false reports back to Berlin, confirming the fake army's existence. This deception system, run by a committee whose name, the 20 Committee or XX, was a Roman numeral pun on double cross, was so effective that every single German agent sent to Britain during the war was either captured or turned into a double agent. The French resistance cuts the lines. Meanwhile, inside occupied France, ordinary citizens were preparing for the invasion through acts of sabotage that could get them killed. The French resistance was made up of people from all walks of life, factory workers, farmers, teachers, shopkeepers, who secretly worked against the German occupation. They gathered information about German troop positions and sent it to the Allies. They hid Allied pilots who had been shot down. And when D-Day came, they had an essential mission: cut German communications. On the night of D-Day, the French resistance acted swiftly. They cut telephone and telegraph wires, making it harder for German commanders to coordinate their defense. They sabotaged railroad tracks and bridges, slowing the movement of German reinforcements. American codebreakers working through the night on June 6, 1944, learned from intercepted German messages that the French resistance had acted swiftly to cut German communications. As one code breaker later wrote, "So much resistance, so many brave men working to defend the free world, had come together. The genius who was destroyed by his own country." The story of the code breakers doesn't end happily for everyone. Alan Turing, the mathematical genius who helped save countless lives by breaking German codes, was persecuted after the war by the very country he had helped save. In 1952, Turing was arrested and prosecuted for being homosexual, which was then a crime in Britain. He was convicted and sentenced to undergo chemical castration through hormone injections. 2 years later, in 1954, Turing died from cyanide poisoning, apparently by eating a poisoned apple. He was only 41 years old. Turing's death reminds us that heroes aren't always treated as heroes. The man who helped shorten the war by years and save thousands of lives was driven to death by his own government because of whom he loved. It took until 2013, nearly 60 years after his death, for the British government to formally pardon Turing. What this teaches us, the success of D-Day depended on many kinds of courage. There was the courage of soldiers charging onto beaches under enemy fire. But there was also the courage of Polish mathematicians sharing their secrets before their country fell, of women working in secret buildings without any public recognition, and of French citizens risking execution to cut a wire or blow up a bridge. History often remembers the generals and the politicians. It sometimes forgets the thousands of ordinary people, many of them women, many of them from small countries, many of them quietly working in secret, whose contributions were just as essential. But then there's another question that still divides people today. Who really won World War II? Was it the American soldiers at D-Day, the British codebreakers at Bletchley Park, or the Soviet soldiers who died by the millions fighting Germany on the Eastern Front? Different countries tell very different stories about the war, and those stories matter more than you might think.